D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Willie Donick should join us in the final hour of the program.
Yes.
He is traveling with the red-hot Nashville Predators, who take on the Colorado Avalanche again tomorrow, this time in Denver. So once Willie gets settled in the Mile High City, he is expected to join us, hopefully, for the final hour of the program. Immediately, we have received a text on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Man, I like DVD okay, but y'all should have been called AWD, Adam, Willie, and D-Mace, the all-wheel drive.
I think, hey, we like it.
I mean, I think more people are familiar with DVDs than AWDs, and AWD doesn't roll off the tongue the same way as DVD. Also, I don't deserve top billing. Derek deserves top billing, hence why it's D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick. I guess it could be Donick, Vingen, and D-Mace.
Yeah, either or.
It doesn't roll off the tongue the same way. No.
Yeah.
Well, the same texter has responded and said, "No doubt, love the show, fellas. It's nice to not want to punch through the radio on my way home." Well, that doesn't mean we might not make you feel that way sometimes,
exactly.
But we do appreciate the compliment. But let's start on those red-hot Nashville Predators. They win again 7-2 against the St. Louis Blues last night at Bridgestone Arena. 6 wins in the Predators' past 8 games. The story of the game, Steven Stamkos. 4 goals last night. His second career 4-goal game. The 4th 4-goal game in Predators history. By the way, the list of the players who have scored 4 goals in the game for the Predators is hilarious. Eric Nystrom, Rocco Grimaldi, Philip Forsberg, and Steven Stamkos. That is an eclectic list. But the Predators keep on winning, man. 6 wins in 8 games. When this stretch started, the day before, I should say, the morning of when this stretch started, which was November 26th, if I'm not mistaken, the Predators woke up that day 11 points out of a playoff spot. Today, they woke up 5 points out of a playoff spot. So they've gained 6 points in the playoff race over the past couple of weeks. Derek, you asked me a question right as we were getting off the air yesterday. You wanted to know how many more wins this month the Predators would need to collect for me and maybe for others to change their tune about what the Predators are doing. And you know what? The Predators did make a trade today. We will talk about that in just a moment. I did some math. So last season, it took 96 points for the final wild card team in the Western Conference to reach the playoffs. 96 points. For the Predators to reach 96 points this season, they would have to play at a points percentage of 654, which means they would have to play like a top 5 team in the league the rest of the way. Even if they need to reach 90 points, they would have to play like a top 10 team the rest of the way in terms of points percentage. So, look, it's going to be incredibly hard for the Predators to dig themselves out of the hole that they dug for themselves to start this season. But they're on their way. At least that's the way it looks. Winning 6 of 8, Steven Stamkos playing well. Hell, maybe Steven Stamkos is thinking, get me the hell out of here. I'll score 5 goals in a game if it means you'll trade me. I don't know that. I'm just being facetious there. But it was an awesome atmosphere. And as I've said many times, you know, I have my concerns, my doubts about the plan that Barry Trotz has for this team long term. But to watch this team win and to watch this team win big and score a lot of goals, it's exciting. You have to give him that.
Now, do you attribute this, you know, more so to the opponents, even though they did play Florida and they did beat Colorado? Do you contribute it more to the opponent?
Or do you believe
that this team is starting to find their stride?
Well, as you know, Derek, having been a professional athlete, you can only play the teams that are on your schedule. But let me take a look at the teams the Predators have played over this stretch. Let me see if I can quickly determine where they are in the standings. So they've defeated Detroit, Chicago, and Calgary. So let's see. In terms of points, Calgary is 31st. Let's see. Where is Chicago? Chicago is 22nd. Mm-hmm. Detroit is 11th. They defeated Colorado, who is first.
Yes.
They defeated Florida, who is 21st. And they defeated St. Louis, I just said, who is 29th. So it's a mix. It's okay. A mix. They've faced some struggling teams. They faced some good teams as well. So, again, it's been fun to watch. I saw the score was 2-1 last night. Mm-hmm. In the second period, I put my phone down to help my son get ready for bed. I looked at the score again. It was 5-1. I said, what the hell happened? And Philip Forsberg did a Philip Forsberg thing, and Steven Stamkos scored 4 goals. So as Matthew from Jolton on our text line says, so are the Preds good? They're good right now. I don't know how sustainable it is. I don't want to get too nerdy with y'all. I have my doubts that they'll be able to sustain this for a significant period of time. But it looks good. It looks good right now. And I know Willie wants to talk about this, so we will revisit the Predators when Willie Donick joins the program, hopefully in the 5 o'clock hour. The Predators did make a trade today, Derek. Mm-hmm. They traded defenseman Spencer Stastny to the Edmonton Oilers for a 2027 third-round draft pick. Overall,
what does that mean?
Well, they have, or had, a surplus of defensemen. Spencer Stastny was playing third-pairing minutes for the Predators. I saw Barry Trotz made comments on the trade. I saw it in the Tennessean. He talked about it being a numbers game. They have a surplus of defensemen. There are other young players that the Predators want to get into the lineup, and the Oilers needed a defenseman, so the Predators were dealing from a position of strength. And Spencer Stastny is a solid defenseman. But I think what he has been for the Predators is what he's probably going to be for the Oilers and for the remainder of his career. He's going to turn 26 early next month. So I don't see a ton of growth left for him. Again, a solid defenseman. Always good to have solid defensive depth. But I don't think Spencer Stastny is the type of defenseman who really moves the needle one way or another. So, again, the Oilers also made a trade today with the Pittsburgh Penguins. They needed an extra defenseman because a defenseman was involved in that trade. So Stastny fills that role for Edmonton. But the Predators get a third-round pick out of it, which isn't bad. Mm-hmm. I believe now they have 4 third-round picks in 2027, so who the hell knows what they're going to do with all of them. But it helps whether you want to draft a player, you want to package that pick to trade for a player, you want to package that pick to move up in the draft. There are a lot of uses for all of those third-round picks. So I know there are Predators fans who are disappointed to lose Spencer Stastny. By all accounts, he's a really nice guy, missed most of last season dealing with some personal issues, but came back. I believe played in every game for the Predators up until now. So good for him. He goes to Edmonton. That team's in a win-now mode. Mm-hmm. He'll be playing meaningful games. So all in all, I don't really have a whole bunch to say about it. I think it was a solid piece of work by Barry Trotz.
Now, how much of this is sustainable in regards to the winning? Because you're seeing – And we had Barry on the other day, and he talked about some of these young guys, whether it was Woods, Evangelista, or Shvedskov. Mm-hmm. These guys are contributing now. Is that sustainable, you believe, from what you see? And I'm not saying Stamkos is going to score 4 goals, but do you think the play, it may not equate to 4 goals, but do you think the play is sustainable?
I see a Steven Stamkos who looks far more engaged, which is not to say that he was dogging it out there, but I'm noticing him more on the ice. Again, he did score 4 goals last night. He has 8 goals in his past 8 games. So he's starting to heat up, which is good, whether it helps the Predators win games or if it helps a team that wants to acquire Steven Stamkos. maybe a four-goal game, says, maybe we should jump on Stamkos sooner rather than later because he's starting to play well. So it could be good either way. When I talk about it being sustainable, all right, I will take 1 minute to be nerdy. There is a stat that's known as PDO, which is simply combining a team's shooting percentage and save percentage. And the higher those two numbers are when you add them together, that the, you know, when you add those two numbers together, the higher the total is, the more likely it is that you are getting the bounces.
Okay.
100 is the baseline. So if you are, if your save percentage and your shooting percentage are, if you add them together and it equals 100, it means you're getting what you deserve, basically. The Predators are at 106.1 over the past eight games. They are shooting 14.9% at 5-on-5. That's not going to last. That's going to dip. But it depends on the goaltending. That can dip. If UC Saros still plays well, you can overcome that. That's my really quick way of trying to be nerdy with all y'all. So, all together, I see a team that seems to be figuring things out. There is a little luck involved, which is not a bad thing, because the Predators, for the past season and a third, really haven't had any luck. So it's not a bad thing that the bounces are going their way for the first time in a long time. We'll see if they can sustain it. Tomorrow's game will be incredibly tough. They did just beat the Avalanche, but now they have to go to Denver and play the Avalanche, which is incredibly tough. So we'll see what happens there. The Spencer Stastny trade, I think it's a solid trade. Stastny was a fifth-round pick in 2018. You get a third-round pick for him right before he turns 26. I don't think you can quibble with that, although Scott from Shelbyville argues with me. He says the Predators lost that trade. Edmonton's third-round pick is at the ass end of the draft. It's basically a fourth. You traded an NHL-level player for a definite maybe. Maybe in 5 years we get something out of it. I hear what you're saying, Scott. Again, I don't see Spencer Stastny as the type of player who is going to make the ultimate difference for the Predators in the long run. He can be a good role player for you. And now he's going to be a good role player for the Oilers. But the Predators had a surplus of defensemen. The Oilers had a need. Perhaps they were willing to overpay for a third-pairing defenseman. You take it. You take it, and you can use it to draft a player. You can use it to make a trade. You can use it to move up in the draft. Who knows? But for as critical as I've been of Barry Trotz, I think it's only fair to say I thought this was a solid move. So that's my take on that. Matthew says, last season the Predators couldn't get wet if they fell out of a boat. I would agree with that. So we'll get more into the Predators once Willie joins the program in the 5 o'clock hour. Derek, quickly, we do have an update.
Yes.
On the Michigan situation with Sharon Moore. It is indeed fluid. From Dan Wetzel and Pete Thamel of ESPN.com. Quote, former Michigan football coach Sharon Moore faces three criminal charges as his arraignment Friday revealed details of his actions that led to him being arrested and jailed hours after he was fired Wednesday. Prosecutors charged Moore with felony third-degree home invasion and two misdemeanors, stalking in a domestic relationship and breaking and entering. Bond was set at $25,000. The arraignment and charges offered a window into Moore's actions after he was fired for cause due to an, quote, inappropriate relationship with a staff member.
Wow. And the story continues. More and more continues to come out. It's a bad situation for Sharon Moore, for his family, for everybody involved. And again, he takes a bad situation and makes it even worse. Can't claim to know what was going on in his mind, but whatever, he went into panic mode. And that panic, you know, put him in a position now where, you know, emotionally things change for him. You know, with his family, things are going to change. Employment is going to change. He took a bad situation and made it worse. So hopefully, you know, whatever happened, it's hard to even comment on it because it's just like, man, as much as I hate Michigan, I wouldn't wish this on a person. But again, like I said yesterday, you know, you understood the minute that you, you know, put yourself in that situation, or y'all put yourselves in that situation, what could potentially happen. I don't think he believed this would happen, but whoever thinks the worst is going to happen in situations like this, no one, unless you just don't care. And, you know, the worst happened for him. He took the worst and he compounded it even more, because the worst is your wife finds out, significant other, she, you know, dismantle the family because of your indiscretions. That what you would seem to be the worst. Not losing your job, then going to jail because you chose to, you know, make a bad situation worse by stalking and then breaking into your mistress' home. So it's unfortunate for him.
It is. As you said, this story is fluid. It certainly feels that there are new, incredible is one word to describe it, details of this story each and every day. So we will keep an eye on it. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by Wilson County. Hyundai.com. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators, who have won 6 of 8 after blowing out the St. Louis Blues last night. Steven Stamkos with 4 goals. In the game, the 4th 4-goal game in Predators history, his 2nd career 4-goal game. The Predators also traded Spencer Stastny to the Oilers for a 3rd-round pick this morning. We'll take your thoughts on all of those, 615-737-1025. But coming up next, Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us a little bit earlier today. We'll talk to him about the college football playoff, the Heisman Trophy. I want to get his pulse on the Tennessee fan base after the hiring of a new defensive coordinator. I've seen a lot of Vols fans excited about this, so we'll talk to our favorite Vols fan, Chad Withrow, coming up next. 615-737-1025. If you are looking for a good spot to watch NFL games this Sunday, come by Twin Peaks in Madison, home of the 29-degree beer, and join 1025 The Game for the pregame show before the Titans take on the 49ers. The pregame show is brought to you by Parma Tractor and Equipment and Old National Bank. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you. The Chase and Big Joe Show will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky inside the Mint Gaming Hall this Monday prior to the Monday Night Football matchup between the Dolphins and the Steelers. But in the meantime, let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick. He is brought to you by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs. Hi, Chad. How are you?
Doing great, guys.
So, Chad, as one of our resident Vols fans, I need you to give me a pulse of the Volunteers fan base following the loss to Vanderbilt, the invitation to the Music City Bowl, the firing of Tim Banks, and the hiring of Jim Knowles as defensive coordinator.
Well, you know, in order, it's agony, lukewarm, joy, and then overwhelming joy with Jim Knowles. Right, like rock bottom, you just get absolutely dominated in that second half against Vanderbilt. And then Music City Bowl, okay, that's fine. At least we can drive the game if you're a Mid-State Vols fan. And, you know, who really wants to go to Jacksonville at any time? And then, you know, Tim Banks fired, okay, good. Josh Heupel is seeing the error of his ways, and he's going in a different direction. And then, guys, I think Jim Knowles is a great hire. And really for this reason more than any other, it's Josh Heupel stepping out of his comfort zone, because the big question for Heupel was, is he always going to play show friends and not show business? Because he is almost loyal to a fault with his guys and his coaching staff. And Tim Banks had been with him for a long time. Tim Banks did a nice job in a few of those seasons. He was the reason they got to the playoff the year before. So it certainly wasn't all bad with Tim Banks, but it was so bad this season, and especially against Vanderbilt. If Diego Pavia doesn't throw those 2 interceptions, Vandy scores a touchdown on pretty much every drive. Tennessee was not stopping them, and they had no answers for Vandy out-scheming them and having a numbers advantage every time in the run game with the running quarterback. It was really incredible to watch. So I think that was the last straw for Tim Banks. They were helpless in that game defensively. But I think going out and getting to Jim Knowles, a guy with a great track record, that's an older coach that has no prior tie to Heupel that can really just be the head coach of the defense was a really good and smart move by Josh Heupel to show that he's willing to change whatever needs to be changed in order to get this team back to a playoff level.
Chad, Gentry Estes of the Tennessean is up in New York City for the Heisman Trophy presentation tomorrow night. Of course, Diego Pavia, a finalist for that award. And he tweeted a picture of something that I found incredibly interesting that must have been in the Heisman Trophy guide. The smallest margin of victory in the Heisman Trophy voting in its history was Mark Ingram in 2009 beating out Toby Gerhart by 28 points. Next closest was Bo Jackson in 1985 beating out Chuck Long by 45 points in the voting. How close do you think the voting is going to be tomorrow night? We assume between Diego Pavia and Fernando Mendoza.
How was the Bo Jackson Heisman that close, too? That blows my mind that anyone was that close to him in that 1985 season. I think it's going to be close. I think, you know, I kind of study the betting markets and see what they're thinking. About midweek, it really went in favor of Fernando Mendoza, which I think now Diego Pavia is plus 1,000. And last I saw, I think Mendoza's minus 2,000 to win it. So, guys, I think this sort of – it almost gets into an electoral college when you look at the voting. Like, everyone in the South is going to vote for Diego Pavia because they watch the SEC and they watch them. They know how good he is. Everyone in the Midwest is going to vote for Fernando Mendoza. I have no clue what the West Coast is going to do. The Southwest will probably vote for Diego Pavia. And the Northeast will probably vote for Big Ten and Fernando Mendoza. It's hard for me to think of a scenario where the quarterback of undefeated number one ranked Indiana and what he's meant to that team does not win the Heisman, especially considering he had the last crack at a Heisman moment. You know, he had the big passes to put the game away against Ohio State in a game that 19 million people watched last Saturday night while Diego Pavia was at home and not in the SEC championship game. So I think when you get the last showcase, you typically win. But it was an incredible final month and push for Diego Pavia. And I'm not saying that he's, you know, not going to win. I just feel like it's going to be Fernando Mendoza. But it's definitely those two guys. I mean, everything you look at, I don't think Julian Sain or Jeremiah Love have a shot. I think it's going to be Mendoza or Pavia. I just feel like it's probably Fernando Mendoza's trophy tomorrow night.
At one point earlier this week, Chad, I looked up the odds for the Heisman Trophy. I think it was before the finalists were announced, or maybe right after. And Julian Sain was plus 70,000. Plus 70,000. That's
I think he's
long.
Plus 50,000 now.
Okay.
Even after the four finalists. I mean, I think that there it is very clear that he's going to be dead last of the four. I want to say he's like plus 50,000, plus 25,000 for Jeremiah Love. I'd have to go and look. And then I know that Pavia is plus 1,000 and Mendoza is minus 2,000. And they put those – I mean, I just feel like they kind of know at this point with all the votes being cast already. So, and it's hard in some books to even bet on it for that fact that somebody out there knows and you can't bet too much money on it at this point. It just feels like Mendoza. I mean, what a story. And not that Vanderbilt's not an amazing story also, but you got to – hats off to Indiana and what they did in beating the perennial powerhouse in Ohio State in that Big Ten championship.
Yeah, Chad, I think it's going to come down more now to last moments than actual numbers. Because if you look at the numbers combined, Pavia has the better claim to the Heisman Trophy. But I think
And D-Mace, you're right, because all the rushing stats, it's not even close.
Exactly.
He rushed for almost 200 against Tennessee in the final game of the year. But it's really incredible. We looked at this today on our show. When you go back through the years and look at, this is a weak stat year for quarterbacks, period, for the Heisman. Cam Ward a year ago threw for almost 4,400 yards. And I think that Mendoza's at like 3,600. And I want to say Pavia's maybe at 3,700 or 3,800. But there are guys that have lost the Heisman. The year Caleb Williams won, he threw for almost 5,000 yards and 47 touchdowns. So the numbers are actually down with those quarterbacks, but you're right. I mean, if you combine the rushing and the passing, no one comes close to the percentage of carrying an offense the way Diego Pavia did.
Now, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Hutt when we had him on the other day. Where is this Vol program? Because going into last season, I think before the whole Nico stuff happened, I thought they were in a good place and they were trending up. And then obviously the whole Nico fiasco and everything was unsure going into the season. But then they got off pretty good. So I think there was a lot of optimism. They didn't finish like they wanted to, but it just seems like they're in this space right now. And it may change after the bowl game. There may be a lot of optimism going into the offseason, but it just seems as if the Vols are sort of in this standstill place while Vandy is sort of still moving in a sense. Not to say that they pass UT, but Vandy's moving. It seems like UT is just stalled for a second.
Yeah, I think, you know, Tennessee is in a place now, and it's not a bad spot to be in. They're mm-hmm. in this yo-yo of 10-2 to 8-4 mm-hmm. to 10-2 to 8-4. Right, so every year right now in Tennessee, I think the expectation is, with the money being spent in NIL and where Heupel is as a coach and all that, that, hey, if you don't get to the playoff, your fans are disappointed, right? Now, are they firing the coach? No, if you have a decent season. But if you don't go to the playoff, that's the goal every year for Tennessee. And if you don't accomplish that, then it's a disappointment. So this year's a disappointment at 8-4. You know, 2 years ago at 8-4 in that Joe Milton year, a disappointment. A year ago, 10-2, you're happy, because you got to the playoff with a good defense. The year before that, you're thrilled because that 22 season kind of came out of nowhere, similar to sort of Andy really this year, even after the 6-6 year last year, to kind of come out of nowhere and have that great year. Yeah, I think when you look at both programs, you know, Tennessee did just have their best ever recruiting class, finishing top 10 for the first time under Heupel. He's been between 11 and 15 nationally in every year, and he just finished 7th. They got the number one receiver in the country. They got one of the top quarterbacks in the country. They had committed for a long time who never wavered. I think what you're talking about, D-Mace, that mm-hmm. momentum, it's real for Vandy because of the Jared Curtis thing, right? Like, not only did they beat Tennessee, but then a few days later, the top quarterback in the country, which happens to be right here in Nashville, and I call this state championship game, and the kid is incredibly talented. But he decommits from Georgia. He decommits from Georgia, and he is going to Vandy. So I think that Vandy has the momentum now. I do need to see them next year mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of skeptics, and I think that this is understandable. You look at that roster. They had 35 seniors. They got a lot of 24- and 25-year-old guys on both lines. They're losing a lot, and not just Diego Pavia on that team. So they're going to have to see if they can reload. They're going to hit the portal. Mm-hmm. And they're going to get some veteran guys in the portal also that's going to help them immediately. But I do want to see what they look like, because I think Jared Curtis is going to be the starter. I think he's been told he's going to be the starter from day one. And I just don't think that goes great for any true freshman in college football right now. Because the sport has gotten so much older mm-hmm. and so much more experience on guys, I don't think any 18-year-old, I don't care how good you are, Bryce Underwood was a transformational prospect at Michigan. He wasn't that good this year in year one as a true freshman starter. So I think Vandy's going to take a step back, but I'll say this right now. If they go 8-4 next year, give Clark Lee a lifetime contract and make sure you lock him up forever, because that will be quite the accomplishment.
So if I walked into your office and I have some, and you got to take off your orange glasses. If I walked into your office and said, hey, listen, I got this UT stock. It's been good, but it seems to be kind of stalled a little bit. It's not doing bad, but it's okay. But I got this Vandy stock over here that seems to be itching up. Should I take some of this UT stock and transfer it over to the Vandy, or should I double down on UT?
I mean, honestly, I think as an investor, I wouldn't buy either stock because I think Tennessee's stock price is stagnant, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think that they're, like I said, they're like 8-4 or 10-2. Mm-hmm. You know, every year you can expect that. And then if they're 10-2, everybody's happy. If they're 8-4, it's fire everybody and it's disaster for a lot of fans. I just think Vandy just saw the best season in their program's history, mm-hmm. and it's not going to happen again next year. So how do they come back from that? Now, what Jared Curtis proved, this is why I would, gun to head, I had to pick one, I'm buying stock in Vandy, because I still believe that they're proving sustainability for two reasons. They didn't let Clark Lee get away when he actually went to Florida and interviewed, by the way, and that was a power move to get Vandy to give him what he wanted, but he did interview for Florida. He got what he wanted from Vandy. He wanted to stay, and he is locked up long term. And getting Jared Curtis shows that you can be a player with national high school recruits. Mm. We know that they can do a good job in the portal, but I think landing that five-star quarterback of that position,
it's like
from
validation.
Your city, Exactly. That was them. That's the blessing coming from the high school ranks, saying, okay, Vandy seems cool. I can go to the NFL here. And not only that, it's not just some cute story. I can go win games, and I can go compete for big bowl games or the college football playoff or anything else. I will say it is incredibly, and I'm not, this is no slight at Vandy, because they couldn't help this the way it broke out this year. It's incredibly disappointing, and I'm saying this, Vandy should be in the playoffs at 10-2, right, in the SEC, in most every year. It just wasn't the case this year. I mean, you look at the other resumes, and I get why they were left out, because their two biggest games and chances of huge wins, they didn't win. But I think any other year, everyone else is crossing themselves out, and they're going to get in at 10-2. That's the disappointing part to me. Vandy's going to go win 11 games. They're going to go smack Iowa, because this team likes to play together, and they're not going to have opt-outs. They're going to go destroy Iowa and win 11 games. It's already the best season in program history. It's only going to get better. I just want to see if they come, again, 8-4 or better next year. Clark Lee is the three-time SEC Coach of the Year, and if you're Vanderbilt, I mean, name a building after him. Whatever you have to do to keep him, do it.
Quickly, Chad, your thoughts on Shedeur Sanders, at least statistically, outplaying Cam Ward last week. How should Titans fans feel about that?
Terrible. They should feel miserable about that. Shedeur Sanders looks like the better quarterback. That was his third start. That was Cam Ward's 13th. That's not a good look for the Titans or Cam Ward. I understand why Cam Ward is a bit disgusted after that game. And I know people are talking about, oh, he can get over it. It's a win. That win did nothing but weaken their draft position. I don't think it helps anyone's morale that much. I just think it hurts their draft position. And, again, they're not drafting quarterback next year. But if you get that number one pick, it gives you the ability to trade back with a team that desperately wants to trade up and get that quarterback. And what the Titans need right now is volume. They need quality volume. They need more picks. They need more players. They need better depth. They need a couple stars that they just don't have enough of right now. And I would be very concerned if I'm a Titans fan that Shedeur Sanders is outplaying Cam Ward to that level. Shedeur Sanders, fifth-round pick. Cam Ward, number one overall pick in start number 13 versus third start for Shedeur Sanders. It's not good. I know Shedeur Sanders threw a lot more passes and all of that, but, I mean, Cam Ward was 50% passing, and guys, it's not a good sign. I just have not seen enough from Cam Ward to feel that good about anything right now.
Chad Withrow has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Friday on the program. Chad, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
And D-Mace, if we're buying stock, the stock could never be lower right now in the Titans, so now's when you buy.
Exactly.
So even if it's bad right now, like, it can only get better.
Penny stock.
So you buy at rock-bottom prices right now. We're buying that stock.
Thank you, Chad.
All right. See you guys. Have a good weekend.
Chad, as always, brought to you by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs. 615-737-1025. We are going to continue the Cam Ward conversation coming up next, because there is an aspect of his game that a lot of his naysayers have pinpointed, and we are going to discuss whether it is something that can be fixed. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. This Sunday, the NFL Game of the Week, Vikings versus Cowboys at 720 on 102.5. The game, the NFL Game of the Week, is presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12th South. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you. Willie Donick expected to join the program in the final hour once he gets settled in Denver. That's where the Predators will be tomorrow to start a road trip against the Avalanche. And Derek, we were just talking to Chad Withrow about Cam Ward. And when we have conversations about Cam Ward, there is something that always comes up on our text line, on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And it's about Cam Ward's inaccuracy. How many texts or calls have we received? He's missing wide open guys. Things like that. And there have been times where Cam Ward has missed wide open guys. I know the throw he missed to Chim Dike last weekend in Cleveland was one of those missed throws that people pointed to. I believe the analyst on the broadcast, I believe it was Mark Schlereth, mentioned that throw as well as one that Cam needed to make. So I saw Tom Brady was on Colin Cowherd's podcast, And the two of them were having a conversation about Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams also struggles with accuracy. But I heard Brady's answer, and I do think, although the question was about Caleb Williams, I also think it applies to Cam Ward. Here's what Tom Brady said on Colin Cowherd.
Well, I always care about accuracy from a quarterback standpoint, because when you get to the bigger games in the playoffs and the defenses are better and the margin of error is less, you have to be an incredibly accurate passer. And the passing game is so important when you're behind in games. Because, you know, if you're playing with a lead and you're running the ball in play action and pass, a lot of times with play action pass, you can get guys open by, you know, 3-4 yards of separation. So therefore, you don't need to be as accurate. When you are down 28-3, you better be extremely accurate because the windows are very tight. You're going to have to throw, you know, 30, 40 passes in the second half and overtime of a game against a myriad of different coverages. So you're going to have to understand the strengths and weaknesses of all the coverages. I think there's a lot of ways to get the job done at quarterback. You know, a lot of guys in the NFL have different skill sets. I do believe it's a passing league. It always has been. It always will be. You can benefit from a great running game, but when the rubber meets the road and you're in big time moments and you're in games where it's very contested, you're going against a team that's at the similar pedigree, you better be an elite passer, an elite processor. You better have great intangibles and resilience built up in you to be the leader of that team.
That was Tom Brady talking about the importance of accuracy, which seems sort of self-explanatory. If you are a quarterback, you need to be accurate. But, Derek, I can bring the numbers. You can bring the insight. Cam Ward's completion percentage, 59.1%. That ranks 32nd out of 34 qualified quarterbacks this season, ahead of only Caleb Williams and J.J. McCarthy. The NFL has a stat called completion percentage over expectation, which is the difference between a quarterback's actual completion percentage and his expected completion percentage, controlling for the level of difficulty of each pass. Cam Ward's CPOE, for short, is negative 3.8%, which is 30th out of 34, which is another way of saying he's missed some throws. So there are other factors. Pro Football Focus charges the Titans with 17 drops on passes from Cam Ward. 17. I saw a stat today from FTN Fantasy, which said that Alec Iemanner has the highest drop rate in the NFL of any pass catcher with a minimum of 50 targets. 20%, which means he's dropping a fifth of his targets. So you do have to factor that in as well. But I think a question, Derek, that a lot of Titans fans have is this. Is Cam Ward's inaccuracy something that can be fixed? Or is Cam Ward's low completion percentage something that we're going to have to expect from him as he matures?
Can it be fixed? They've said that about several quarterbacks. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you a name of all of them. Josh Allen. They said, could Josh Allen fix his, you know, accuracy and whatnot? It took him 2 years, but he ended up fixing it. And what is he now considered an elite quarterback? Okay, you go to Lamar Jackson. What did they say about Lamar Jackson? He had to fix his accuracy and his completion. What did he do? He fixed it. It happened. The next following year, they tailored the offense to him. They started doing things and making sure they centered that offense around his skill set and allow him to grow within it. And what is he? A two-time or three-time MVP. Was it two or three? Time MVP. You look at Caleb Williams. They were saying, can Caleb Williams get it? He was an abysmal 57%. He wasn't even 60%. Can he get it? This kid can't get it. What happens? They marry him with the right head coach that broke down everything and is building him back up, and now he's at 62% completion rate. He's a much more accurate quarterback than what he had been his previous year. So I say all that to say this. Yes, it can be fixed. Will it be fixed? I'm not sure. I'm not Nostradamus, okay? I'm not sure if it can be fixed. But what I tell you this is, if guys start catching balls, then, yeah, the accuracy may look a little bit better. Cam has to get better at delivering the ball, okay? What I've noticed is that the deep routes, those deep corner routes, and those middle of the field routes, that's where, really the deep corner routes, that's where the accuracy is off. I think he's gotten better at throwing the slant from his right to the left. He had trouble with that at the beginning of the season. He was throwing behind guys. He got intercepted. So I looked at things like that. He's getting better at that. But he still his down-the-field accuracy needs to get better. You look at Bo Nix. You know why Bo Nix was 63 last year and 66 this year? You know his average, I guess, passing yard is?
Average depth of target? Exactly. Air yards per target?
It's like 28th or 29th amongst, you know, starting quarterbacks.
Short passes.
Yes, they are. What they're doing is they're allowing him to grow within an offense. They're giving him, they're drilling in his head, take the easy throws. If they're there, take the easy throws. Don't force anything. We saw when Bo Nix tried to force things. We saw it in a Titans game. He almost gave it the game to the Titans because he was forcing things down the field. They are bringing him along slowly. Ben Johnson is bringing Caleb Williams along slowly, something that should have happened last year. Josh Allen, they brought him along slowly. They built that team around him. They hired the right coach. They got playmakers around him. They didn't think Josh Allen was going to be able to change who he was as a player, and now he's considered an elite quarterback. Lamar Jackson is the same way. Now he's considered an elite quarterback. Caleb Williams is getting better. Bo Nix is getting better each and every year. You find the right coach for this young man. Tailor that system to what he can do. Put some players around him. Don't always try to go for long shots down the field. What did we see when McCoy took the job? Everything became quick. You know, get the ball out of your hands. Take what the defense. And his completion rating went up. And he seemed a little bit more accurate. They need somebody that's going to take this kid and start it off like a baby. He doesn't need to go, you know, from diapers into the deep end. He doesn't. Bring him along slowly. Is he getting better, I feel? Yes. Is there a lot of things still there that we need to see? Absolutely. But it was the same way with Josh Allen, same way with Caleb Williams, same way with Lamar Jackson. And there are other quarterbacks out there that I can name.
I'm looking at Josh Allen's career. His first two seasons in the NFL, his completion percentages were 52.8% in 2018, 58.8% in 2019. Over the past six seasons, his completion percentage is 65.8%. So from 52.8 and 58.8 in his first two seasons to 65.8 over the past six seasons. Lamar Jackson, his first season, 58.2%. Since then, his completion percentage over his career is 65.2%. Now, I don't know how much of that is the supporting cast, how much of that is changing or tweaking mechanics. I haven't studied Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson like that. But to your point, it can be done. But where would you – let me ask you this question, Derek. Of the things that a young quarterback can fix – Where would you put accuracy? Is it something that you would put at the top, as in it's fairly easy to do, or would you put it near the bottom of the list where it can be incredibly difficult to rectify?
Man, goodness. I'm not going to say it's an easy thing to fix, because if that was the case, then we would have more top-tier quarterbacks than what we have now. I do believe if you work on it, if you learn how to play within the system that you're playing, and you do have to have talent around you, plain and simple, because you can't, throw 5 yard and 3 yard passes all game. You have to be able to get the ball in big chunks. You're able. Tom Brady was so good. Peyton Manning was so good. Drew Brees was so good. Why? Because of this. because they were able to hit those small passes, but then they were able to hit you down the field too. So you didn't know whether they were going down the field or they were going with short passes. So you were at a disadvantage already, and you had to play your assignments like never before. Cam hasn't reached that point yet, nor has have the Titans reached that point. Again, he has a long way to go, but he can fix it. Is it a tough thing? Yeah, I think it is tough because, again, if it wasn't, then you would see a lot more quarterbacks or high-level quarterbacks than you see now.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Can Cam Ward's inaccuracy be fixed? How confident are you that Cam Ward's inaccuracy can be fixed? 615-737-1025. We will take your reaction and continue the conversation coming up next. We are presented by Bax Homeworks, remodeling done right. Get a free estimate now at BAXHomeworks.com.